Today on Straight Talk Africa, a discussion on the challenges and opportunities facing the current transitional government of national unity in the Republic of South Sudan. That discussion is coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Saleh, and today we are discussing the political situation in South Sudan. A new era is underway in South Sudan after two missed deadlines, years of failed peace agreements and stalled talks. South Sudanese officials have finally formed a transitional government. Will this new unity administration bring changes to the country? My colleague Ian Deng Bior provided some insight from Washington.
South Sudan has claimed tens of thousands of lives and created Africa's largest humanitarian crisis. Since gaining its independence from Sudan in 2011, the East African nation has been plagued by turmoil. But with the formation of a transitional government, its leaders now say the country has turned a new page.
This action signifies the official end of the war, and we can now proclaim a new dawn in South Sudan.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says 4 million South Sudanese are forcibly displaced, including 2 million refugees, making it the third largest refugee crisis in the world after Syria and Afghanistan. The nonprofit charity Oxfam says at least 50% of the country is experiencing extreme hunger. Rebel leader Riek Machar was once again sworn in as the country's first vice president last month.
First, I want to take this opportunity to congratulate the people of the Republic of South Sudan for attaining peace. I want to assure you we will work collectively to end your long suffering.
The reshuffle in the government comes with a shift in tone between Kiir and Machar, who had been at odds since South Sudan's conflict erupted in Juba in late 2013.
I have forgiven my brother, Dr. Riek Machar, and first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan.
South Sudan's revitalized transitional government of national unity is led by President Salva Kiir, his top deputy Riek Machar, as well as four vice presidents who are equal in rank, including Rebecca Nyandeng de Mabuor, widow of John Gereng, who led the revolution against the North. The peace agreement calls for the parties to decide on the number of states and their boundaries, as well as the military and police quarters and unification of forces. President Kiir has agreed to change the number of states from 32 to 10, previously a major sticking point. While there is hope that the formation of the government will finally bring peace to South Sudan, there is trepidation from experts who warn the country has a long way to go before it is absent of political hostility and a new dawn is fully realized.
It might be very difficult to pull South Sudan out of the civil war if they treat this in-between period as just a time to politically campaign against each other as political rivals. So the question is, are they willing to be political partners for at least a while, or are they going to be political rivals only moving forward? I think if they're only political rivals, which there's a pretty good chance they continue to act mainly as political rivals. But if that's the case, I mean, hopefully we can at least preserve the ceasefire, but it'll be hard to see South Sudan really moving forward in a way that I think a lot of South Sudanese would feel quite comfortable for.
Kelly Kraft, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, says the formation of the government is a first step towards stability and peace. For now, the citizens of South Sudan are hoping that the newfound peace will be lasting. Ian Deng Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Ian, for that report. Joining us in Washington today our three distinguished guests, Angong Ador Akwiri, Counselor at the Embassy of South Sudan here in Washington, Ruth Muok Dang, Deputy Chair of the National Committee of Youth, Culture and Sports of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, John Tanza Mabusu, Managing Editor of VOA's South Sudan in Focus Radio Program, and joining us by phone from Juba, South Sudan, is Angelina Tene, Chairwoman of the Strategic Defense and Security Board. Ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the four of you on Straight Talk Africa.
It's my pleasure to be here after a long time.
You're most welcome.
It's nice to be here to meet you again, Shaka. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thank you, Shaka, for having us.
Yeah, and I think for you in particular, it is the first time that we are having the honor to host you.
Yes, thank you.
You're most welcome. Let me come to you, Angelina. First of all, good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
I'm well. It's been a while.
Well, it's a very long time since we last met here in Washington, D.C. Finally, you find yourself back home. What is the mood like, and how do you sincerely feel if you were to talk to us from the deepest, better part of the bottom of your Southern Sudanese heart and soul?
Okay. First of all, I want to say that there is a lot of optimism in the air. People are very eager to commence the next phase of the implementation of the agreement. The people of South Sudan and the parties are quite happy and hopeful that this time around we will really give it a serious go, that it becomes sustainable. So there is a lot of optimism despite the challenges. So that much I can say about the mood of the people in Juba. We are being told, because I came to Juba in December of 2018. When we initially came, Juba was almost like a deserted ghost town. Now, in fact, you are having like road jams. Many people have come, and there are lots of activities. There is reduction in the many deaths. You know, you used to hear about unknown gunmen. It's still there, but at a very much reduced rate. So all of these are good signs. Well, having said that, the challenges are also as daunting. And so on for the agreement, for the implementation, and particularly in the next phase. So
now,
that is the situation.
Angelina, what about some doubting Thomases who say that you have been there before and it did not work? What is it that is new that gives you the confidence and the trust that this time around it is all systems go and you are going to be in a position to deliver to the South Sudanese people?
In that regard, let me speak on behalf of IO. It is our commitment that actually the alternative to this peace agreement is unthinkable. The people of South Sudan have really suffered enough. We have taken enough death tolls on this. In fact, the people themselves are not in a position to continue this. So for us, it's our full commitment. And in this, we have taken serious risk. You are aware that we are in Juba, we have surrendered our security and everything to the incumbent government that has just gone out, and President Sentsa. So that is to build the confidence that you were talking about. In our view, confidence and trust is earned. So it's earned through action, like the kind of action that we have taken. We said, okay, you know what? Despite the fact that the agreement says you need to deploy unified forces before you can establish a government, but because of the challenges and because of the two extensions, and we see that, you know, we cannot lose momentum and we need to maintain momentum, we decided to say, okay, you know what? Let's take the risk. Let's move on. Let's form the government. And you have to leave some few things to God sometimes. So that is speaking on behalf of IU, and this is why we are very confident that this spirit and this gesture from our part will be reciprocated, you know, from our peace partners and so on. So, and I believe the feeling of the people and the feeling of the fatigue and the war fatigue, myself, I'm engaged with the organized forces in this review process for the transformation of the forces. And you get it very clearly from those who are in the forces who have been fighting that they are tired of it, that they are not ready, and that they will not encourage anybody or any other leader who would want to pursue this path of war. So from that, it gives me confidence, and it gives many, many other people confidence that, you know, there are the chances of this becoming sustainable is very reasonable.
How do you respond to those who say that this transitional government is premised on hoping for the best while planning for the worst?
I still want to say on behalf of IO, we are planning for a sustainable peace. And it is our intention in the implementation and in the other mechanisms to ensure that we take this process to a point whereby if anybody is planning for the worst, that they should not get the opportunity and deny that opportunity for anybody who wants to return this country back to war. So we can only do what is within our capacity. And so on. And I want to say that, you know, even from the part of the government, I don't want to speak on their behalf, but I think they would find it very difficult if anybody is intending to go that path. Just because of the spirit that you see, the people, the spirit being displayed by the people. And so on. So anybody who wants to risk and take people back to war, they will definitely have no support whatsoever from the majority of the population. And we also believe that even the majority of the fighters, people are now in the mood of going for unification. And they are excited about it. In training centers, we are facing a lot of challenges, very serious challenges. But nevertheless, forces are in training centers, and hopefully they will commence training very soon. Once that is done, you would have a unified force deployed. So that is what I can say. For the doubting Thomases, really I think we should all join efforts to ensure that the challenges that are facing us in this, the implementation of this agreement, we face them together. We face them together, we work towards this, and I'm saying this to those who have not signed the agreement, who have been talking to the government and to us, parties to the agreement, who signed the agreement recently in Rome, to really join the process fully. And together we, you know, we make a strong opposition to push for the kinds of reforms that the agreement put forth. And these are really challenging, you know, the reforms in the reforms in the economic sector, the reforms in the security sector, transformation of the security sector, the beginning of the work on the permanent constitution, the amendments of the different laws that have been set out in this agreement, the transition of justice, which has three aspects to it, the hybrid court, the truth and reconciliation, and the reparation and restoration authority. So there's so much that we need to be working on. The agreement itself, some people say is quite ambitious, but for us in the implementation, we say yes, as much as it is ambitious, what is needed is the political will. With the political will, we can move mountains, we can make this agreement work, and in less than 3 years, we would be, you know, on the route to democratic election, and so on.
Well, Angelina, thank you very, very much for interacting with us, and good luck in your efforts to bring about peace and to deliver services to the people of South Sudan.
Thank you. I just want to add one more thing. Like today, for example, you must have been following that the parties were dialoguing and discussing on the issue of the allocation of the ministerial portfolios and governance of the state. And I can tell you that this afternoon, that hurdle has been actually resolved. So within the next 2 days, you will definitely have the rest of the government completed. So that's one good news, and we hope that that is still continuous of, you know, compromises and coming to consensus in the process of the implementation of this agreement and so on. And thank you, Shaka.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and good luck. Well, let me come to you immediately, my sister Angong. First of all, you're most welcome to be on this show for the first time.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome again. Let me ask you this question. You heard Angelina talk about how there is the presence of the essentially what you would call is the political will. Mm-hmm. And there's no question that in this particular case, you need the political will as a prerequisite for bringing about essentially a long-term solution in terms of a lasting peace.
Yes.
Do you get the same sense that there is the necessary political will indeed?
Yes.
But how come if there is the necessary political will that it's been really taking time before you could actually put together a cabinet?
Well, the fact is that there's so many steps that have been taken in the last 2 weeks that have been very encouraging, and that shows that the government has the political will to actually bring lasting peace in South Sudan. And one was actually compromising on the issue of states and boundaries, mm-hmm. which was reducing the states from the 32 to 10 states, which was a huge compromise for the government. And this has been deferred to the new new revitalized government to resolve later on.
Right.
That in itself is a gesture of peace and intention of keeping the peace and bringing lasting peace. We just heard Madam Angelina also talk about the, you know, resolution of the allocation of the ministries and also the formation of the government. That in itself is also goodwill in terms of, you know, compromise. I think what we need to underscore to everybody is that the dialogue is going on.
Right.
The guns are silenced. Mm-hmm. And this is the political space that you need to actually discuss and to bring the situations to the table. That in itself, I think it's a pretty big show of the political will of the government that this has to be resolved.
I see.
In addition as well, we are one people, after all, at the mm-hmm. end of the day. Mm-hmm. We're not fighting any outside forces or anything. And this is the kind of political space that we've always been fighting for. And I think that it's here. And that's why we also believe that this peace will last this time.
Very interesting. Ruth, I'm sure that you have to agree with your sister, especially the giant step taken by President Salva Kiir Mayardit to move back to the 10 states. But what about the introduction of three administrative districts? Abia would seem to be okay because that, of course, is an area that you basically, you are still having sharp disagreements with the neighboring Sudan. And Buma is another one that some people probably may not find problems with. But what about Luweng, which seems to be the epicenter of oil and happens to be in Unity State?
Well, thank you, Shaka, for having me again. I want to take this opportunity to thank Madam Angelina for a very elaborated point she presented and optimism that that what she said tale about what is going on in Juba. I also thank my sister for what she just said. First of all, we appreciate Salva Kiir for having taken that decision to revert the country back to 10 states, even though it is something that was done illegally, because the argument was not because of the 32 states were not created constitutionally. They were done outside the constitution. It was a unilateral decision by Salva Kiir. We have a council of a state that is tasked of increasing the number of counties in the state and all this. But that body was jammed. It was not involved into all this process. So the creation of 32 states was unconstitutional. It was illegal. By the fact that it was unconstitutional, the fact that Salva Kiir himself have realized that this is causing more problem, this is hindering the implementation of the peace agreement, and he has taken that decision to take us back to 10 states, should be and must be appreciated. And I do appreciate Salva Kiir because that showed the political will, of course. And about the Luweng issue and the administrative area of Abia and Buma, I think Abia has its own case that is known to everybody in South Sudan. They have their own protocol in the CPA. And we have been on the case of Abia for the whole time that we became an independent country. Mm. Buma also had that issue before the peace agreement. They have requested it, and everybody knows it, but it was not implemented. The only problem is the Luweng state, because Luweng is purely part of what created 32 state. And Luweng also had the issue of curving the land of all the Nuer community who have a border with the Unity State people. So it was a problematic, and it was part of 32 state, and it should not have been done by the president. But the SPLM-IO have sat down, we said, okay, since the president has taken that move to return the country to 10 state, and even though this is a problem, we don't accept it, but we will solve it on the way. It will not hinder the implementation of the peace agreement. Mm. So it was accepted in a condition that let's go ahead with the implementation of the peace agreement, because the people of South Sudan are waiting for us to bring the peace to them. And issues like Luweng state cannot now stop us from moving forward, even though it is a problem. Mm. So this is the position. And I think also Madam Angelina said this all, you know, SPLM-IO now is now all in Juba. Nobody left in the bushes. All the SPLM-IO, they are together with Dr. Riek in Juba without security arrangement. They don't even have bodyguard as we speak. Mm-hmm. Even Riek himself, his bodyguard is not carrying any arm.
What about your forces? Do they have
containment
areas? Yeah, all the SPLM-IO forces are all in the containment area. It is only some containment area where the government did not you know, bring the armed forces to be merged together for the training. But in our part, and Madam Jelena said it all because she's the one tasked with all security thing. She knows it better. All the SPLA IO forces, including the police and the unified presidential guard, they are all now in the training camp. And nobody is left behind. So we're waiting for the government to bring all the armed forces that belong to him in some places. In some places, they have taken their people.
Any particular reason why there has not been the agreed upon formation of the National Army, essentially whereby the strength would be at least 80,000 soldiers?
Well, on our part, we don't have anything left because we have provided the personnel. They have been taken to the place. This question would be answered well by the government. And to me, I think it is the government that is delaying all the processes. And the reason why they do that is up to the government to respond. Why they are not implementing. You know, of course, during the implementation, people were talking about the money issue, there was no money that is put in place and all this. And this whole thing come from the government side because they are the one running the shares of the finance in the country. They are the one to provide them. And as PLMI just came with Imitian from the Bush, they don't have money. It's the government to fund everything. And it is known that the government delay in putting PAN to implement all the rest of the agreement. I do not want to go much on blaming the government because the spirit and the mood now is about peace agreement. And we want to support that momentum of peace and, you know, and reconciliation. And we are just urging the government, if there are things that they did not do and they are in their fathers, it is known that there is nothing left with the SPLMIO. Everything is now with the government to respond. They must show that will because the people of South Sudan, they're waiting for us.
I see. Well, John, I don't think that I can think of any journalist that has probably had the privilege and honor and opportunity for covering the story of South Sudan as you have.
True. I have lived that story for my time here at VOA. I've been here for almost 9 years, and I've been covering the crisis in South Sudan from day one to date.
And it is your story because, after all, you are a citizen of South Sudan.
That's my village, as I call it.
So when you hear, for example, your three compatriots talk, do they make sense? Does this make sense for you? Are the conditions on the ground, have they changed to the extent that you can now believe that a lasting solution, in as far as your country is concerned, is on track?
I think the most important thing that we need to understand in South Sudan right now is that the level of violence has reduced. That is manifested. If you go to different parts of the country, the level of violence has reduced. But the political tension is still there. You can see that it's taking them almost 2 weeks to agree on who should be where, which ministry should belong to who. That's a sign that the parties have agreed to form the revitalized transitional government of national unity. But they still are not agreeing on simple things like which ministry goes to which party. And all of them will tell you, our people have suffered. You heard Angelina say, the people have suffered too much. Now, if you are for the people, why not form the government and provide them with services? Why are you taking so long to form the government? And that's why I'm telling you, the level of violence has gone down, but the political friction is still there.
That leads me to the next question. When we talk about power sharing in this particular context, are we sincerely talking about power sharing so that the transitional government gets the capacity and the ability to serve the people of Southern Sudan Or are we perhaps talking about sharing positions, in which case really we're talking about vanity? Someone might say, this is our turn to eat.
I think we need to look back at the revitalized peace agreement. The agreement set conditions and rules for governance. For instance, the five vice presidents, each vice president is in charge of a cluster. If you take from the first vice president, Dr. Riek Machar is in charge of governance. Vice President Waniga is in charge of the economic cluster.
Why do you need five vice presidents? Well, you are a population, the last time I checked, of 12 million people. You are talking about a cabinet of 35. You're also talking about members of parliament,
but we need
who are around 550, in fact, greater than a country like Tanzania, which is made up of 60 million people. Greater, in fact, your parliament is greater than the Congress of the United States of America, which has 300 million people, and yet it has about 535 members of Congress.
But we need to look at the root cause of the crisis in South Sudan, power. The members of the ruling SPLM disagreed among themselves on the modalities of doing reform within the party. So
it was a democratic, in fact, disagreement.
Well, they disagreed on how to run party affairs. For instance, the convention, I don't want to call names here, some party members wanted the convention to be held so that they can elect a new chairman. And then they disagreed on the mode of electing the new chairman. Some party members were saying, we need a show of hands. Others said, no, we cannot show our hands. We need secret ballot. And so that disagreement resulted into this conflict that dragged on and on for 5 years. Now, if you want to resolve a conflict
for five
like
years, and in that period, during that period, can you imagine how many people have died? Can you imagine how many people have become internally displaced people? Can you imagine how many millions of people have actually become refugees on their own continent?
But I just wanted to bring the context of why five vice presidents. Since power was the issue, I think the agreement was negotiated in a way that those who are power hungry should be satisfied so that the level of violence is reduced. And I will still get back to it. The agreement addressed one key issue, reduced violence, and they will continue to talk about the outstanding issues. For instance, the unified army. There is no unified army in Juba. The agreement said there was to be a unified army so that when they're in Juba, they don't longer go start fighting each other. They will be called South Sudan Army, not IO, SOA, or FDs, or whatnot. But that has not been there. Angelina was telling us, for the sake of peace, they have agreed to move forward and, you know, implement the peace agreement, and they will come back to the other issues. But we are yet to see if they will live under one roof peacefully.
Can I jump in?
I see. Well, unfortunately, time is not of its ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, so please don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
Being part of Our Voices is about more than just sitting here and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure their voices are heard.
Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. Every week, connect with our experts. You can ask them your questions and get their advice. Join me, Lina Hmudu, in Washington on Healthy Living, your new health program, right here on Voice of America.
Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, You can watch our show there and leave a comment. Now let's look at what's on tap for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the United Nations says climate change is the defining issue of our time. Its impact is already being felt in Africa, affecting food production and political stability, and it will increase if action is not taken. The effects of climate change on the continent on the next Straight Talk Africa.
And today we are talking about South Sudan's new unity government. Our guests are Angong Doro Akwil, councillor at the Embassy of South Sudan here in Washington, Ruth Muok Dang Tang, deputy chair of the National Committee of Youth and Culture and Sports of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition, and John Tanza Mabusu, managing editor of VOA's South Sudan In Focus radio program. Earlier, we were joined by Angelina Tene, chairwoman of the Strategic Defense and Security Board. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. You're most welcome. Let me come to you, Angong. You know, there are so many doubting Thomases in this world. Yeah. There are people who have been watching the story of your country, and they still have reservations as to whether this time around you are going to get it right. And in fact, there is a very intelligent man. His name was Professor Albert Einstein. He was a professor of physics at Princeton University, and he's a recipient of a Nobel Prize in physics. He basically came up with the formula for relativity. He talks about how, for example, if you continue doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. In his particular view, he says, that amounts to insanity. If true, is it possible that in fact we may be looking at a sort of political insanity here in South Sudan?
Well, Einstein is indeed a wise man, but I believe that war hasn't served us well. The fighting within our people has not just beyond the loss of life, it has also torn the social fabric of our country. And that's why the president and the government is very keen on the process of reconciliation and the process of peacemaking. There's a lot of compromises that have been had, and there's a lot of dialogue. It doesn't matter how long it takes, 2 weeks, 2 months, as long as we're talking and we are agreeing for a path forward on what kind of government that we want and what kind of reforms that we want and what kind of country that we want. I think it's better than actually having the guns, you know, talking. This is one. Going back to the political issues, there's always two sides of a coin. I think with the process of the cantonment areas and the peace and the joining of the forces, it's ongoing. Yes, it's taking longer than it should. But this has a lot to do with logistics, a lot of to do with with the economy as well, with the issues of money. Remember, we are still, the economy is shattered because of this war. So there's also a shortage of that.
But what about the fact that your government is bloated? You talk about the logistics, you talk about money and what have you.
It is bloated, but to support
too many people in government, holding very important positions which require very high salaries and all that kind of stuff. Why? Is this in fact about sharing power for the benefit of the ordinary South Sudanese? Or is it about vanity, the individuals getting positions and big packages here?
Well, there's a couple of things. South Sudan is a pretty recent country, and running government is something that requires experience. South Sudan is actually held to the standard of countries that have been in existence for more than 300 years or 200 years. We are in the process of figuring out what it is that unites us as a people, because what united us before was war. And now we are in a space where we need to figure out as South Sudanese what is best for all of us. And I think that is what the government is trying to do. Right now, currently, the government is the only main employer. Okay, and that shouldn't be the case, and contractor.
Right.
And that is why you have this bloated civil service, you have this bloated, you know, government, and that's why these positions. And the hope is that with this, when this peace is given a chance, the other sectors will develop. The economy.
In fact, we have not talked about the military, because
South Sudan
has, in fact, the reputation, perhaps, of having the world champion in terms of having generals. I mean, really?
These are all compromises that the government has to make to keep peace, to silence the guns.
At the expense of the ordinary South
Sudanese?
Well,
at the moment, I think this is what will work for us until we can give the country a space to grow.
I see.
And I think that's what's important. We need that space for our economy to grow, for the private sector to grow, and all of those things. And this is the reason why having the opposition and all the groups in South Sudan for us to discuss our political future is very important. So I think that political space is what is needed.
I'm afraid, Agong, there is no democracy in Studio 47 when the producer says you have to go.
Yes.
I have to go. Let's go to the lifeline of the show. And I'm talking about the telephone callers. Good afternoon, Tedla. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, good afternoon, Shaka. As you well know, I am also following South Sudan since independence, and we are now here at this moment. I wish South Sudanese identify themselves as South Sudanese rather than tribalism. This is a problem for all of Africa, but this young nation, South Sudan, can still have hope. And I wonder if this the young generation really takes in charge of taking South Sudan from these warlords in the future. Let's help them. This is an African issue. We want them to succeed this time. Lastly, they have to succeed. There is no way out now here.
Very interesting. You know, Reith, you heard Tedla. He says that it is high time you cease to look at yourself in the context of ethnic communities and look at yourselves as Southern Sudanese. It is very interesting that when you were still part of the largest country on the African continent, which was called Sudan, you looked at yourselves as Southern Sudanese. And you got your visa and right to call yourself Southern Sudanese, and you somehow were not satisfied with that. You keep getting into smaller and smaller groups. Is the issue really about ethnicity, about nationalism, or is it about social, economic, political justice for the people of South Sudan?
Well, Chaka, there was no doubt that the people of South Sudan have fought for independence. And they were looking for a country where they will be seen as the first-class citizen of their own country. And we have achieved that. So then what happened with that, we would say that it was lack of the leadership. You know, all the time, establishing a nation and government, the only body that it does for establishing a viable country is the government itself. And the government of South Sudan then failed to achieve certain things. You know, government is responsible to create the life of the people and the nature of the people that will live in the country. Because the government create law. Law will regulate the life of the people and it become the culture of the people. The government have the opportunity to create the nature of the people of South Sudan, the nature of peace. They can make South Sudan to look themselves as one nation and create an identity for the people of South Sudan. He's not the people who can create that. And that is why there is a problem with the SPLM, which I see some of my colleagues, even my brother John, I say that those who say that it was a power struggle, they are denying justice to democracy, because what happened in South Sudan was not a power struggle as people say that it was between Salva Kiir and Riek Machar. It was a transformation within the SPLM to transform the SPLM to a mass movement, a democratic movement. Since it come out from the war, it has to create an environment conducive for democratic processes, and that will challenge or that will transform the government of South Sudan. That is why I disagree with the people who say that, you know, people need power. And people who look into that context, I think they are not doing justice to what people were trying to do, because we were trying to say that let be a democratic country. This is one of the things that we say that the government then failed. That is why some people rise up within the party and say, we are not doing the right thing. Mm. Why don't we do the right thing? And the right thing was to democratize the party, to democratize the country, to do certain things that were raised by that particular moment. And that also brings me to the issue of we need peace now. It is not too late to start, and that is why today we are talking. We don't want to go back, especially the issue that was raised about, you know, why people were fighting on, you know, ministerial portfolio and all this kind of thing. And it is hard now to talk about because it is concluded, because people have already agreed on who should take what. On behalf of the SPLM, IO, we were on the peace agreement, because the peace agreement, as it was revitalized, it is most of it is still the same, and the allocation of the position was also agreed on the paper on the peace agreement. It's still there. So we're saying that, okay, what we did last time, we should continue doing it. Apart from the fact that there are some political parties that emerged that may need consideration, that may take some position from both parties, but the fact is that the government was saying that, you know, they have to put down the paper of the peace agreement or the agreement, and there have to be a gentleman agreement. And that gentleman agreement is what bring all problem, because as Salva Kiir was saying, for example, you want to say the Minister of Defense, the Interior, the Oil, the Finance, and all this kind of thing. The SPLMI was not saying that, why are you taking all the service ministries or the economic ministry? We're saying that, no, let us not get out from the peace agreement, because the agreement say that who should take what.
Okay, let's go to, again, continue with the lifeline of the show, and I gather there is a call from the Republic of Uganda, and there is a Frederick. Frederick, good evening. You are most welcome straight to Africa.
Good evening, Shaka.
How are you, sir?
I'm fine, and I want to thank you for the show and the guests in the studio.
You are most welcome, sir.
Uganda is one of the countries that many the refugees from Southern Sudan. Whereas I want to appreciate the efforts by the warring parties to bring peace in Southern Sudan, I'm also concerned about the extent of the commitment towards the peace-building processes in Southern Sudan. I want to appeal to the warring factions and the leaders to think about the many externally displaced Sudanese, especially the refugees Uganda and other areas of Africa, that these refugees have suffered enough, and therefore it's time right enough for the leaders to forget their egocentric feeling and rather concentrate on the national unity and the peace in Southern Sudan. I thank you.
Thank you very, very much, Frederick. How do you respond to that, John Tanza Mabuso, both as a reporter and in fact as a Southern Sudanese citizen?
I think, let me respond to the caller talking about the displacement and the refugees. It's true that half of the population are in refuge, either internally or externally.
Mm-hmm.
And when the unity government, when President Kiir sworn in the four vice presidents, because Hussein Abdel Baghi was sworn in later, the four, in his speech, he appealed to the refugees to come back home. But how can a refugee come back home? Someone in a camp who has nothing on him, who is waiting to get a cup of maize and beans.
Is there an infrastructure to welcome them?
No. I remember in 1972, when we were brought from refuge from Uganda to South Sudan, there was a refugee commission set that was working with the UNHCR to ensure that repatriation is done gradually and in a dignified manner. People come back home, you are given a place to stay until your relatives find you and pick you. I don't see that structure right at home right now. Maybe they will do it tomorrow or next. But the other issue is the political developments in the country is even sending fears to the hearts of the refugees. The delay in the formation of the ministerial positions. I mean, we have a WhatsApp group, the South Sudan in Focus has a WhatsApp group, and people write to us comments. They're saying, if the government is saying we should come back home, why are they not agreeing in forming a government? Why is it taking them too long to form ministerial position? So for the refugees to come back home, there has to be a conducive environment. The issues of land has to be resolved. There are people whose lands have been taken by force.
The leaders have to go beyond at least the perception of this is my turn to eat. It is my turn to serve my people.
There is a saying in South Sudan that our son, our daughter, today if my sister Ngong is appointed, everybody from her community will say, our daughter. And if Ngong is removed, everybody will say, why did they remove our daughter? So because, the issue of our
son,
is the problem.
The daughter provides or is like a social economic ladder?
Well, they see you as representing them in the government. They see you as a symbol of their presence in the government. So today, even I'm appointed.
In terms of accessing what, though?
In terms of getting services, in terms of, you know, being advantaged. Today, if I'm appointed, I think the whole village from Meridi will come to Juba and say, our son is there.
Very,
the
same, very interesting. In
fact, the same applies to our friend Red. If Red becomes a minister, I'm sure the whole village from Bentiu will come to Juba because they want to access the services that you have.
Actually, we do have a caller from the Republic of South and Sudan itself. And the name is Johnny Cole. Good evening, Johnny Cole. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Good afternoon. Actually, my name is John Cormayol. I would like to say good afternoon to all of you.
How
John
are you?
Kanda, and I'm doing good. And brother Red Moich, I'm calling from Seattle, actually, Washington.
Oh, I see. I see.
Yes.
So what is your question,
Shaka,
sir?
What I would like to say here, our people, our leaders, they got the truck. They lost the value that South Sudanese were fighting for 22 years, which is justice, liberty, and prosperity. Now, I don't want to go back and start talking about these, but I hope they can give themselves a chance to implement this peace agreement. Right? Because if this peace agreement is implemented and culture of peace is embraced, I think our people, they are going to be living with coexisting. And also, we have an issue with the regional bloc, because it seems like everyone in the region wants South Sudan to continue with war so they can get whatever they can get. South Sudan becomes a hunting field for them, which is very unfortunate.
I hope you are wrong. What is the question? Johnny Cole.
Pardon me?
What is the specific question, sir?
I did not ask a specific question, but I was saying that I hope our leaders, they should embrace the culture of peace at this moment.
I think there's a problem with the line. There's a problem with the line. Well, I guess, Akong, you can hear your brother is almost... I mean, it seems to be very skeptical that this time around you are actually serious.
I think that...
What is it that you think that the leaders really on the ground need to do in order to build the necessary and needed trust and confidence among your people that this time around you really mean business?
I think the one of the most important things, I think, is that the atmosphere, I think there is a war fatigue. This is one. And I think the government needs to exploit the fact that now truth, and I think reconciliation is very key, and building that dialogue for people to talk, for communities to actually have an input in what kind of government that they want to see is going to be very key. And I think now with the leadership coming in, I think it's important that we engage the people at the grassroots. They tell us their needs and what the government should be able to do for us. Also, I think we need to forge a national identity, because like what Tanza was saying, it can be because Tanza is there that all his family comes from Aridi and says, this is our person. I think this is what is ailing our system. And if we don't forge a national unity beyond our tribal
lines, turn to eat.
We will not move forward. Then it's going to be a cycle. And I think we need to forge an identity where it's like, I'm a Hmong and I'm a South Sudanese. You know, he's Reth, he's a South Sudanese. He's Tanza, he's South Sudanese. I think this is very key and very important.
What about some of these reports, for example, alleging or in fact tabling a lot of instances of corruption?
Well, corruption is part of it, and this is part of the reforms that need to be done. A lot of it now, this new government, the challenge is for them to really sit down and be part of the solution, okay, not be part of the problem. And I think the new revitalized government really needs to sit down and actually implement all the reforms that they've been calling for, especially from the opposition and especially from the, you know, from the SPLM-IO. Now we are sitting at the table, we are governing together.
Right.
Let us now carry out the reforms. And it will take out all these arguments that have been going on. And I think one of the things is the way we talk also needs to change. This language of accusing and all the time saying, blaming the government, blaming the IO, this is not taking us anywhere.
You need to respect one another.
Yes, we need to respect one another, and we need to listen to each other's views without, you know. And I think a lot of things, too, are just rumors. A lot of it is an exaggeration of a lot of things. But I think this time around, there is the intention for peace, and there is the intention that we need to develop.
What
we
about,
cannot continue like this.
You know, the last time, of course, we know of the first vice president, Dr. Riek Machar, found himself in a situation in Juba where he had to head for the nearest political tall grass out of town with his supporters. To what extent would you say, frankly, that there is sufficient, for example, chemistry that has occurred now between the two sides, that they actually can sit like you sitting here with Reith?
The difference was that peace agreement was an imposed one. It was not like this one. This one
was this one is inside.
This is for is more. I think this was a lot more because
really?
Yes.
What about the pressure of IGAD and IGAD Plus?
Yes, but I think the dialogue, the fact that they were given the space to dialogue together is different. Earlier on, it was just from far away, and there's a lot of impositions, like the creation of two armies within one state. That was not an idea that any of us had wanted, and we felt it was imposed. This is different this time. We're integrating our forces.
Do you agree? 20 seconds.
Well, I think we would say that the agreement is almost moving forward in a good spirit, but it's still the same because last time, for example, the issue of two army, that was not two army. I think this was
20 seconds,
misunderstanding. I think that is a chance for us to reach into agreement when people come to understand themselves.
I see. And, well, on that note, our guests today were Angong Dor Akwil, Reith Muok Tang, John Tanza Mabusu, and Angelina Tene. Thanks to our audience for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, South Sudan. And please remember to keep the African hope alive.